Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in to the Big Honker Podcast. Listen, everybody needs to stay caffeinated this time of year. Dirty Duck Coffee. It's the way we start our morning out here every single day with the Missouri Boat Ride Blend. It's a nice pecan flavor, pecan praline. Put it in my thermos with a little dash of peppermint mocha, white chocolate sometimes, you know.
It's like
I'm at Starbucks, Joe.
Get a little fruity on me. I love the Suns Up, Guns Up t-shirts and stuff. They got some cool swag. Check them out at dirtyduckcoffee.com.
Next, we are brought to you by Mr. Corey with Double T British Kennel.
Oh, great dogs.
Corey's got some great dogs out there right now. We ran them last year. Phenomenal dogs. They're great house dogs, great pets, but they also have a ton of drive in the field. So if you're looking for a puppy, a starter dog, finish dog, whatever you need, head over to britlabs.com. Contact Corey over there. Even if you just have a question, you know, something, maybe you're doing your own thing and you need some advice from a professional, Corey's always willing to lend a helping hand.
So. A very good person, great dogs, highly recommend britlabs.com. That's Double T British Kennels.
Next, we're brought to you by Ducks Unlimited. They just finished their Into the Vault sale. They crushed all the records. More money for conservation and wetland habitat. Listen, get involved somehow. Start a chapter, join a chapter, whatever you've got to do. Ducks Unlimited, put your dollars to work, and they're the leader in wetland conservation for a reason. They're great people. We had Jimbo Robinson out here, phenomenal guy. David Schuessler, great, great people, and they do a lot of work on behalf of waterfowl hunters from Texas up into Canada. They've always got our best interests at heart. So
they've got a new thing. Support them. Right now, make a year-end donation to Ducks Unlimited and choose your gift. So check them out at ducks.org.
Next, we're brought to you by Lucky Duck. I have ran the new spinner, the one that's got the black and white wings. And it makes a big difference because ducks can see that black and white flash, like Jeff's been saying for years on this podcast. They can see it better. So we've been doing those. We've had a couple of duck hunts that have gone really, really well. They've got a new rotary out that we've ran a couple times, had some success. They've got kennels that are 5-star crash test rated, so you can feel confident whenever you put your four-legged hunting buddy in the back of your pickup truck in a kennel. If something bad were to happen, they're protected.
Extend your hunting season. Everybody, whenever the waterfowl season's over, go out there and get you a Lucky Duck varmint call and start shooting them coons. Help the turkeys out. Help the quail population out. Shoot the coons.
And that's at luckyduck.com. You can get whatever you need. The new spinner, A-frames, they got a lot of cool stuff for 2023, 2024. So check them out, luckyduck.com. We're also brought to you by Boss Shot Shell. Bismuth is the way to go. Get that lead out of here, and it's a lot better than steel.
And if you want some Boss swag, you need to call the shop, and you can order it direct from them at the shop. And that's at bossshotshells.com. Also, get ready to stock up. Got turkey loads coming. Get the Boss Tom. Turkey season, believe it or not, is only 4 months away.
It's not very far away. I am in love with the War Chief. I mean, it is hard hitting. There a lot of research and development went into this shotgun shell, and it makes a difference out in the field. So, also, we're brought to you by Pacific Calls. You can use our promo code BHP25. Will save you 25% at checkout. That is site wide. Whatever you want, whether you're getting honker calls, spec calls, duck calls, turkey calls. Whatever you're getting, swag, it still applies. 25% off. There's nobody else out there that is going to give you 25% off. I mean, it's a steal, and everybody needs to take advantage of it. PacificCustomCalls.com. You can fill up your shopping cart. Use the promo code at the very end, BHP25, 25% off. They are great guys. You can always get a hold of them if you have any issues. Use the promo code BHP25. We would love to see your lanyard full of Pacific Calls. Next, we are brought to you by Dive Bomb Industries. The hunting has turned here, so I am now running some of the fully flocked specs. And got to tell you, first couple of times, made a difference. Birds were actively trying to get to the fully flocked decoys. I'm a fan. I know what I'm ordering next year. More fully flocked decoys. DiveBombIndustries.com. They're great people over there, and they have been with us since basically the beginning of this show. So head over there.
Good people. Go check it out. Cody Stokes, Asher Tolliver, done a great job. DiveBombIndustries.com.
Next, we're brought to you by Mossberg, the Pro Waterfowl 940. Gun of choice around here at Stanford Hunting Outfitters. It handles the fine sand that we have out here. It plays fits on a lot of guns, but not the Mossberg 940. It's a great gun. Even Maddie shoots it. Maddie Robertson. I mean, how could you not trust him?
I've been shooting the 20 gauge over under and the 28 gauge over under. Great right. guns. Great product. That's Mossberg.com. Check them out. And you can buy them at almost all retail outlets. I'll have Mossberg guns.
Put it to your shoulder. Take it for a test drive. You'll love it. Next, the product of the year. It has changed my dog. Hemp Hill Farm, CBD. Lou will fail a drug test, but he is pain and ache free. He calms down sooner in the morning. He's always had a little bit of an issue with whining. And I'm telling you what, after one or two retrieves, he's hitting his stride. And I also notice whenever he wakes up in the morning, he's not stiff and achy. I give him the recommended dose of CBD before we go out every single morning. And I'm a fan. I really am. They've got roll-on. So that's just for pets. They have a specific pet blend. They also have stuff for humans. They have gummies. They have roll-ons. They have salves. Phenomenal products. If you have the ouchies or something's, you know, got a little lingering issue, head over to Hemp Hill Farm, farm with a PH, .com. And they also have a promo code. BHP saved you 20%, I believe.
And 30% off your very first order today. If you sign up for the Recovery Relief Rest, they get 30% off. I take two of the gummies every night. Well, I take about one to two. Sometimes I take one and a half, sometimes I take one or two. It knocks me out. I go to bed and I get about 6 to 7 hours of solid rest, and I wake up and I'm not sluggish. Doesn't give you the after effects of like taking a Benadryl or a Tylenol PM. It's better for you, and it's Hemp Hill Farm. That's HEMPHILLPHARM.com. Check it out, hemphillfarm.com.
Jeff's a fan. Next, we're brought to you by the Looking Glass Podcast. Head over to their Patreon. Logan and Rebel will be out here next month. They're great guys. Hilarious. All their episodes are 2 hours plus, so it's great for those long road trips. They're a lot of fun to listen to, and they're incredible guys. Really, really fun people to be around. Just go to Patreon, type in the Looking Glass Podcast. It'll all pop up, and then you can do what you need to do. Send over a little bit of money, and you'll have their entire library at your disposal.
Yes, shingear.com. I wear the shin boots. I'm wearing the scout boots right now. I have worn them for 3 months straight, basically. I wear them every day. I wore them in Boston. I wore them in the airport. They're comfortable, just like wearing a set of Nikes without all the politically correctness. At shingear.com. Also brought to you by MLR Graphics in Breckenridge, Texas. It's time for softball season. It's right around the corner, believe it or not. Little League Baseball. If you need your kids to get the best jerseys and equipment you can have, MLR Graphics in Breckenridge, Texas can take care of you. They do all of our shirts, hoodies, caps, everything here. They can take care of you. If you want to outfit your company, whatever you want to do, hats, t-shirts, caps, jackets, the whole thing, it's MLRGraphics.com.
Also, we're brought to you by Alpha Outdoor Specialties, maker of the Stanfield Stool and the Blind Caddy. It has saved my back. The Stanfield Stool has... sitting it every single morning, and it is a dream. We run the Lucky Duck 2x4 blind, so we have four chairs per blind. They are extremely comfortable. So if you want to kick it up a notch in your A-frame or just your regular blind, I suggest you head over to alphaoutdoorspecialties.com, look at the Stanfield Stool, and if you want to stay organized in the blind, get the Blind Caddy. Alpha Outdoor Specialties. Last but not least, we're brought to you by Stanfield Hunting Outfitters. We got a couple dates in January, but not very many. You better get on the horn right now. 940-658-3172. Jeff will answer the call. He'll call you back if he doesn't answer. Send an email, goose@westtex.net. Get some dates.
Nebraska. The last week in Nebraska is duck season. I've got some dates left. If you want to go shoot some birds on the Platte River, holler at me. That's like I said, Andy said, that's stanfieldhunting.com. Or 940-658-3172, and I do answer my own phone.
Thank you so much for being a part of this. It has been another record-setting couple of months. We couldn't do it without you.
God bless you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this episode of the podcast, we are joined by South African Devlin Duvenhocken. Hawker. I'm going to take him out. It's a tough last name to pronounce. Anyway, his family came to South Africa in the 1700s. Built a ranch, a national park, and a couple years ago, the native tribes of Africa came to his family's land and told them, you have a week. We're coming back in a week. If you're still here, you're dead. So this is his story. It's fascinating stuff. You'll never hear any of this in the media. So we appreciate him telling his story. Here we go. And here we go.
Welcome to the Big Honker Podcast, brought to you by Hemp Hill Farm. I'm Jeff Stanfield with the world famous Andy Shaver.
Yeah, that is me. That is me. Hemp Hill Farm does work. Lou, I'm still giving him his CBD half a dose now.
Half a dose.
Just to take the edge off of him, you know.
Sure helped him a lot with his all his joint and pain deal discomfort during hunting season, though.
Yep.
Great for dogs. Check out hemphillfarm.com.
His coat got a lot nicer, too.
Really?
Yeah. Thicker. Thicker coat.
Maybe I need to put that shit on Ollie. With us today, from somewhere in Georgia, our friend Devlin, and I'm going to try to pronounce his last name, Devin. I'm not even going to try to do it because I'm going to fuck it all up. From South Africa, dog trainer, Mr. Devlin, how are you doing? How do you pronounce your last name again?
So you pronounce the last name Devinacher.
Yeah, there's no way I was going to get that shit
Where's
right.
that from?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously South Africa, but where did it originate?
It's actually French.
French?
It's actually French, and it means of the vineyard. So I already have an excuse to be an alcoholic when I grew up.
So you grew up in South Africa. How long have you been in the United States of America?
So this June will be 6 years.
6 years. And you're how old now? 21? Is that what I was told?
Yeah. Yeah. 21 going on 22 this year.
21 years of age. And at 15 years old, y'all were basically told to get the hell out and don't come back. You're white and we're going to kill you, right?
So we had... my great-grandfather is Paul Kruger, which is one of the ex-presidents of South Africa. And he's the one that started the Kruger National Park. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that national park. It's one of the largest ones in the Southern Hemisphere. But anyway, we had about 5,000 hectares that was neighboring to the park. That was kind of part of the family's acreage and all that, that tourists weren't allowed to go to. And we had the highest leopard count per capita for the whole South Africa. On that, on our property. And about when I was 14, they passed a new bill, BE, which is Black Economical Empowerment in South Africa, and then also the Land Grab Act. So the Land Grab Act worked that they can take land that has previously been owned by white farmers and redistribute it amongst the locals so that the wealth of the land goes back into local pockets, as they would say it. But the way that they would do it is they'd strip the land of any white people with no compensation. And if you did not want to sell your land or give your land up, the government wouldn't do it, but the local tribe in the area that the land would go to would come onto your land and pretty much take care of you, murder you.
And it was just nothing could be done. It just they just turned their backs on the white farmers.
Exactly. It's the exact same thing that happened in Zimbabwe, where they're asking for all of the white farmers back now because of it.
Really?
So
I did not know that. Because my wife's cousin married a fella from Zimbabwe, and he was, I can't remember how old he was, but they came onto his family's land, and they said to the mother and the father, so his parents, they said, you have 3 days. We're coming back. If you're still here, you're not leaving. So
yeah.
They scraped up all the money that they had and they sent their kids over to America. And then I don't remember where they went. They went somewhere into Europe until they could get visas and passports and all that stuff rounded up.
Yeah. So we did a very similar thing. They came onto our property and kind of let us know, hey, you guys have about a week. Mm-hmm. So we at least got a week. They said, get all your stuff, get off of here. We are reclaiming this land, was their direct words. And we'd had family that had moved away from us. It happened the same thing to them. And we just figured, okay, We got to pack all our stuff, and we rented a place closer in town because we were about 4 hours out of town. We rented a place in town for about 6 months, and then first chance we got that we had enough funds, we came over here to the States.
So they took 5,000 acres of your land. They turned it over. I'm curious now, what does that land look like now?
So right now, the lodge that we used, because we did do private hunts out of it as well, the lodge that we used is in dissembles. It's utter chaos the way it looks right now. It's has thatched roofing. So they removed the rubber snakes that we had on top of the lodge's roof. That keeps the baboons away. And the baboons in the area have just gone crazy. They've ripped out all of the thatch roofing. It hasn't been taken care of. The leopards in the area have been killed off because the tribe's rite of passage for a male of age is he has to go out and kill a leopard. So the ways that they do it is absolutely horrible, but they've cleared out the leopard population there. That was the biggest thing. We weren't that worried about the buildings and things like that. That could always be fixed. But just the game life there, it has diminished to almost nothing now.
What's the process that they go hunt these leopards?
So with the leopards, they basically go out as many of the men as possible, so about 15 to 20 of the men. And then they do actually now start using dogs. So they tree up the leopard, and then all the men just get around, and now they're using modern weapons or firearms instead of the spears and everything that everyone reads about. and they just, as many people as possible, fire at that leopard.
So it's just turned into a total shit show, basically.
No, it definitely has. A lot of the similar properties that they've taken control of in the Limpopo province, which I was from, there were some very well-established vineyards that were taken control of like that and are now not producing anything anymore. Plenty of private game reserves that had some of the best game on in Limpopo province and now are just absolutely barren.
I'm a big proponent that if you took the world's wealth and you divided it evenly amongst everybody in the world, the people that have a lot of money and things now within 10 years would have it all again. Because people just don't know how to deal with shit, and they're just not very good.
Exactly.
They're not good managers.
It's all about giving someone, like the old saying, where you can give a hungry man a fish, he's going to be hungry again tomorrow. Yeah. But if you teach him how to fish, he'll never be hungry again. So it's the same thing that happened in South Africa. We switched over our government system, and we gave it to people who didn't know any better. So the infrastructure that we have in the country right now, it's still the infrastructure from during apartheid. It hasn't been updated at all. Our exports are still the same as what we were exporting during the apartheid, but our resources availability has changed. So a big thing in South Africa right now is the load shedding, which is a section of the country goes without electricity for about 5 to 6 hours so that another section of the country can have electricity. But one of our main exports is still coal. So we're exporting the coal
right.
that we ourselves need. So it's just small examples like that where it was a once booming country, and unfortunately now they were never taught to fish, to put it like that.
When did all of this switch? When did the powers that be get? I don't know anything about South Africa.
In the 80s.
Since South African politics, but are there elections held?
Yeah, so there are elections. So in 1994, that's the year that apartheid ended and Nelson Mandela was elected the president. The whole world knows that name, Nelson Mandela.
Yep.
But he was only in office for one term.
How long are the terms there? 4 years like
so
here?
So the terms are also 4 years.
4 years there. So
since then, there had been multiple other presidents in office, all with a major political party, the ANC, the African National Congress. That's the party that Nelson Mandela started. But since then, it's gone from equality for all to how can we better the lives of the black population in South Africa and how can we better our pockets who are in the ANC to where we can give the promise to the people but line our pockets the best. So since then, Nelson Mandela only served the one term and each president after that has just taken a little bit more out of the wealth of the country. And pointed in the wrong direction. So one of our most recent ones was Jacob Zuma, And you'd love to hear, he completed his education all the way to grade 5.
Oh, nice.
And he was the president for, I believe, he changed the law that he could serve more than 2 terms. So he served for a total of 3 terms. And eventually he's in prison right now.
What did he go to jail for?
All the money that he was taking from the government.
So he got caught doing what American politicians do.
They sounds like America. Let's give to one race. Let's take it, make everything else bad for everybody else that's white, and then let's get rich, but let's turn our country into a shithole. We're on that same path.
Yeah.
But you know what? We've done the same thing with the Indian reservations. If you go look at an Indian reservation, you can see a thriving ranch next to an Indian reservation, and the thriving ranch is clean, nice, efficient, and makes money. And you can see an Indian reservation where everything's free, no taxes, and it looks like a shithole.
But hold on, but that's a little bit different in the fact that the Indians never did want to settle. You know what I mean? Like, they were nomadic, a lot of them.
But they fought and stole from each other all the time.
I understand that, but that's taking a nomadic person and saying, okay, this is your plot of land. This is it.
Well,
of course it's going to be a shithole. They never were worried. That wasn't in their makeup. If that makes sense.
Well, the world passed them by.
Not disagreeing with you there. But what I'm saying is you took people that were nomadic and said, okay, these are your dwellings.
Well, not all Indians were nomadic.
Not all of them were.
Most of them were, but not all of them were. But it's the same type deal, though, as the government sets aside a group of people and they give them something. And that's what's happening in South Africa right now. They're taken from the people that built businesses.
Right.
And they're taking their crap away and just give to someone. And those people think, oh, well, I'm going to take over that vineyard. It's going to thrive like it did before. No, it's not. Because you don't have the discipline. You don't have the knowledge to take care of this.
No,
it's all ran by a bunch of crooked-ass politicians. It's trying to make everybody else feel good, and they're doing the masses. It's a terrible thing which happened in South Africa. But our government and the media ignores all of it. Like, I've heard stories about them going into these farms and taking these ranches over, and they wear a backpack that's got a cell phone blocker so people can't call for help.
Yeah, so a lot of the farms that the farmers refuse to leave at in South Africa, they're murdered in the most brutal fashion. They always scope out the farm a little bit beforehand, and if they can't get the workers on the farm to turn on the farmer, they kill the workers first, and whenever they get into the farmhouse, it's always the head of the household that's killed last.
Yeah.
He either gets to see his wife and children raped and murdered in front of him, and then he's usually killed last, just to prove a point. And it's proven quite the point in South Africa, because a lot less farmers now are actually trying to fight for it. So just in my area alone, we have South Africans working on all types of farms, just in my area here in Georgia. Then Russia actually offered 10,000 Africans citizenship to come and farm their land. So most of the farmers now that had any influence in South Africa are making the hard but inevitably smarter decision and getting out of there, even though all of our heritage is there. And what makes it even more ironic is the whole purpose of this is to put land back into local hands. But the funny thing is, the only local tribe to South Africa were the Khoisan, which was a nomadic tribe like the Indians were here in America. Now, the Khoisan traded with the Dutch. The Dutch are the farmers in South Africa right now. They traded with them. There was more or less a peaceful coalition, as far peaceful as you can get it in those days. And the Zulu tribe from mid-Africa migrated down to South Africa and absolutely wiped out the Khoisan. Killed them off, and more tribes came down, Khoisas, Sutus, Zulus. So the funny thing is, the Dutch in South Africa have actually been there longer than any of the other black tribes have. So in our eyes, that makes us more local,
right,
than they are. But we're not the color of Africa, per se.
Well, what's the slave situation in Africa? I know that black tribes sold their enemies who they captured to Americans as slaves and people from all over the world.
Yeah.
What is the actual slave situation in South Africa? Were all those farms and plantations built with slave labor or just labor?
Not at all. So South Africa was actually one of the only countries in South Africa that never sold slaves and never purchased slaves on their own property. So if you ask a lot of the older black gentlemen now in South Africa how their life was whilst apartheid was still active, they had food on their table every single night. They had a job they could go to every single day, and their children were well taken care of. So all of our labor, it was paid labor. Now, I'm not saying it was the best pay or anything like that. They had a stable job, they had a stable income, and they had food on their table every single day. And the relationship that a lot of these children had growing up on these farms with the white children was astonishing. I mean, they got along great. These were the only kids within hours of one another, so they would interact in a positive way. Now, obviously, just like here in America, your cities were your more segregated areas where there was a little bit more hatred. But it was never something that there was just be a white person murdering another black person for no reason at all. The biggest times that murders like that would happen during apartheid was if there was a gathering outside of hours. So at 9 o'clock, everyone would have to be back home during apartheid, especially the black community. And that's when most of the problems would happen, would be after those curfews were done. But it was never singling out a black community, going there, murdering a bunch of them. It was never anything like that, like what it is now in South Africa towards the white people.
Have there been any farmers that were able to successfully fight off the tribes when they came onto their land for yes. murder?
Yes. So there was a case of, it was a family of four. They had an older son who was about 17 years old, a younger daughter that was about 9, and then both the parents were in their late 40s, I believe. And they had the father and son tied up. They had already murdered the daughter, and they were going to kill the mom next. The son got loose. He got a hold of his father's pistol. He killed the attackers inside of the home, then pursued them outside of the home and carried on firing at them. He killed one more. So I think he killed a total of 3 of them. There were 5 of them, and he got arrested for murder. He's life imprisonment right now.
Jeez. That's a complete bullshit. It's like our media. Our media makes everybody in America that's young and doesn't read thinks every white person had slaves in their family, every one of them, which is so not even close to being true. We beat slavery. We won the war. We beat the South. But they want to act like everyone's a victim and everyone's this ancestor of a slave, and it's so untrue. And it's gotten so old, and it's just over and over and over and over again. And I don't know what people want. I guess they want what's going on in South Africa, where they're going to kick all the white people out of everything, and they're going to put some black people in over skin color. And it's bullshit. And I know I've got lots of black friends, and they don't like this shit. People are tired of this crap. But they're not saying what's going on. That kid being arrested for murder for taking up for his mom and them and his little sister that was killed, that's complete bullshit. And I'll bet you that the other guys that were guilty of doing that didn't see any jail time or anything, did they?
No, it's very hard. Our legal system right now, if you get pulled over, your safest bet is to just hand over the amount of cash you have in your wallet. Otherwise, the cop will come up with some excuse to book you, and that's then usually where you get killed, is while you're in jail waiting trial or something like that. They don't care what happens in the cells, and most of the time it's actually the police force that are so violent with you that you don't make it to trial.
Wow. It's everything that's going on in South Africa is what our media in America wants to make you think is going on to the black kid here in America. What's going on right there?
Exactly, and it's so unsimilar here. When I first moved here to the States, I went to a little local high school here to finish up my junior and senior year. It was predominantly black school, and I never saw any type of hatred like what we have in South Africa. Yes, there's a few verbal abuse cases here and there, but that's where it ends. It stops at the verbal abuse or whatnot, and it's always both ways. It's not one party. Right. Being more racist than the other. But how you guys have it in America, I really would not call it racism. I'd just call it someone who likes something similar to be with something similar.
Right.
Not necessarily racism in this country. It's You guys aren't there yet.
No, but
we know what real racism looks like.
They're trying to push us that way, and it's a shame. And I've said the same thing. I don't know a racist person. I've never known a racist person that dislikes someone because of skin color. Never in my lifetime. I grew up poor. I wanted to be around other poor people. I didn't want to be around rich people. So I got a poor black kid or a poor Mexican kid. I had more in common with than a rich white kid. I wanted to hang out with people I had similar backgrounds to. And people just don't get that. But America is headed towards where South Africa is if we don't get a hold of it pretty quick. Because they want to take, they just keep wanting to take from us all the time. They tax the piss out of people that are successful. That's nothing more than just giving away money. Mm-hmm. And it's bullshit. And it's just a continuing deal. And I don't know what's going to happen. But if the media would talk about what's happening in South Africa and let people know, people need to be informed of that and see where we're going. Because that's the route we're going on. I mean, they're talking about California is a state that wasn't even around during the Civil War. They want to make it give they're voting to give reparations back to black people. They never had no fucking slavery in California ever. It's the dumbest shit ever. It's just that mindset is everybody's a victim. Well, when you want to see some victims, go be white and live in South Africa. You're truly a victim.
Yeah, so like it's very strange. While I was in boarding school, our food was horrible. So we had a McDonald's that was about a mile away from the boarding school. Whilst I was walking one night to McDonald's, I got stabbed just below in the abdomen. Still have the scar to prove it. And he didn't take my money. He didn't do anything. He just called me Umlungu. Umlungu means white shit in Zulu. Or my mother going to work on the bicycle. This was the 6 months that we were still in South Africa getting ready to come to the States. We didn't have a lot of money, so she'd have to ride her bicycle to work. She got run over and shouted at for being white. And then my father got shot at driving to work. He still had his truck. So it's unnecessary. And yes, it is the way that this country could possibly go if you guys lose your gun rights and lose your majority mindset to where this is how the most Americans are. We're not focused on this minority idea because it's not going to work for the whole country in general.
Now, what are the gun laws in South Africa?
So right now it's about near impossible to get a firearm in South Africa. You have to go through a 3-year trial period where they put you up for psychiatric evaluation. They bring in family and friends to see whether or not you have ever had any murder-like tendencies or suicidal tendencies, things like that. But it's almost impossible if you're not in a profession that requires you to have a firearm. So most of the firearms in South Africa now have either been grandfathered in that are owned personally or are owned by PHs, professional hunters. So, for instance, when we purchased the 308 rifle that we custom-built here in America and we had it shipped to South Africa while we're still living there, we could never legally put it under our name. So we had to have our PH put it in his name and he just bring it to us on each hunt. So it's extremely difficult to get a legal firearm in South Africa currently.
Right.
Easy to get an illegal firearm.
So what's the murder rate there? It's real high though, right?
So we're in the top 10 of the world for the murder rate, and then we're number one for the rape rate.
But those people somehow have guns.
Yes. So most of the murders committed in South Africa are actually more committed by pangas and machetes.
Ugh.
Give me the gun. So,
yeah.
What's a
panga? Not that many of them are actually committed by firearms.
You said it's machete, and what was the other thing?
Panga.
What is that?
So a panga is just a much wider and flatter machete that they use on the banana trees.
I got you.
And then they also use knopkiris. Knopkiri is like a walking stick that has a natural root for the handle, and it's polished and hardened. It's usually a very hard wood. And they used to use that only for hunting, you know, the blunt force trauma. But since then, they've found other uses for it.
So basically, if they come onto your land to kill you, you're going to get hacked to death.
Most likely. Or they find a way to rape you to death. So, there was a 3-month-old infant that was raped to death by 4 men.
That's bullshit. Yeah. Them some bitches out there bawling fucking hell.
And it's all the, it's basically the Zulu tribe is the one that's committing
most
of this?
They're the most aggressive, are the Zulus there in KwaZulu-Natal. That's the province that they're mostly located in. And then your Khoisas. Your Khoisas are also a very violent tribe, and they're mostly in Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Gauteng.
So, as an American, if you go over there and go on a hunt, you're putting your life in danger going from the airport to the lodge you're staying at, aren't you?
So that is the most dangerous part of it, is from the airport to your lodge. Once you're on your lodge, you're as safe as could be. A lot of the locals recognize that they need the tourist infrastructure income. They need to leave the tourist alone. A lot of them recognize that. So generally for tourists, if they stick to the tourism side of it, a lot like Mexico, they'll be safe. Your most dangerous part is that trek from the airport to your lodge.
And how long of a trek is it usually? How many hours are you in a car?
So if you're going in Gauteng, and you're going to one of the lodges, if it's a hunting lodge, it could be anywhere from 4 to 5 hours away.
So you're vulnerable for a while.
Yes. Yeah. And a lot of it being because the roads to the lodges are so remote, and those, the more the remote it is, the more ballsy they get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not like you can call 911 there and get a cop that's going to do his job.
No, not at all.
Jeez. Why are there still white people owning those lodges and hunt lodges? How have they managed to stay in business?
Because who have they paid off?
I know guys that go hunting over there, and they're like, and it's, I also know guys that go to Mexico and hunt, and they're like, oh, you don't have to worry about nothing. Well, yeah, when it's going good, but when it goes to shit, you're fucked.
So a lot of those lodges, what they do is, most of the hunters that come to South Africa, they're trophy hunting. So they don't want any interest in the meat, or at least the vast majority of the meat they don't want. They just want the trophy. So a lot of these lodges, what they do is all of their kills that they make, they donate all of the food to the local tribes in the area. So they basically feed their entire community based on their hunts. So we had one that we were part of a culling hunt. We shot four male giraffes that day on a reserve. We culled the smallest ones out of the four, out of the whole herd, and all of that meat went to the locals. So a lot of the places that are still up and running today, that's because they give a lot back to the community in the area.
Is giraffe meat worth a shit? What's it taste like?
It's actually horrible.
Really? Kind of like a whole
giraffe and zebra. Zebra has yellow fat on it, so it tastes like shit.
Really? Just really. Greasy?
It's greasy, but if you like to, I don't know if you've ever had a horse in Mexico or something like that.
I've not.
It's not a good meat to eat. It doesn't taste real nice. It's really, it's not tender at all. It's very chewy. If you want some of the best meat, ostrich and kudu.
Really?
Ostrich, the chili sticks on ostrich is to die for, and the kudu biltong or kudu steaks is just phenomenal.
I've never heard of, what's ostrich like? Is it kind of like chicken, or is it bigger? I mean,
so it's actually bigger. it's a more of a red meat, but the way we prepare ostrich is we do all chili sticks with it. So very similar to your jerky, just quite substantially drier. And it's amazing. It tears right up in your mouth, very easy to chew, and just it tastes amazing.
I've heard that about kudu, but I've never known anybody that's ever killed an ostrich. So like when you're cleaning an ostrich, you know, they're a big animal. When you remove all the feathers, is it kind of like a turkey where you're like, mother, this son of a bitch ain't that big now that all the feathers are gone?
So with their legs, they're quite substantially, that puts on the bulk of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, when you do get all the feathers and everything off, you're not going to be left with that much meat. Probably closer to about 40, 50 pounds of meat.
Right. Yeah. But like when you see them running around, you're like, well, I bet, you know, they look humongous.
No, they do. A lot of it's just bone.
And they're mean as shit, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that's... the two hunts that you never send your dogs after is your ostrich hunts and your zebra hunts. You never send your dogs after those.
Why not a zebra?
A zebra will kill them quicker than anything else out there.
Really?
So the zebra will, they'll bite the dogs, they'll kick the dogs. Usually what they do is they bite them and then pin them with their front legs, kind of crush them that way. The zebras there, that's one thing we don't mess with all that often over there.
Well, I mean, that would make sense because zebras are always fighting off lions and shit. So, I mean, they got to be mean, right?
Yeah, no, they're real mean. That's the one thing that if you have your long distance rifle dialed in, you can go zebra hunting. But we're not going to do that close range.
What's the snake situation over there? Everything, I mean, black mambas and all the poisonous shit that'll kill you by looking at you?
Yeah, so I've almost been bit multiple times by a puff adder. Puff adders are the biggest cause of deaths over there because their camouflage is just phenomenal, very similar to your rattlesnake's camouflage. Black mambas, for the most part, leave people alone. They don't really go into heavy traffic areas that much. But the only thing with a black mamba is if you do provoke them, they'll come after you.
And they're fast too, aren't they?
They're fast and they're over 6 meters long most of the time.
You know how long that is?
Very, very long, long snake.
That is...
What kind of snake is this?
Black mamba.
Oh, fuck that.
Well, hold on. A meter's 3 feet, right?
You got me wrong. I don't know.
I think it's a yard, basically, give or take. So an 18-foot snake?
That's how long they are? I don't know much about them. I couldn't tell you a difference between a meter, a zillimeter, a centimeter. I don't know shit about any of that crap.
Well, I'll just.
I wish the
up.
World would get on one damn page, make things a whole lot easier.
You said how many I'll meters? You said six meters.
6 meters.
About 6 meters, yeah.
19.82 inches.
So it's only a foot and a half.
No, 19 feet.
Okay.
19 feet, 8.2 inches.
That's a 20-foot snake.
Yeah.
And that sucker will eat your ass. I mean, they'll kill you like instantly, right?
Their venom is some of the most toxic, our most venomous snake, and I'm not sure if it's also the most venomous in the southern hemisphere, but it's the boomslang, which English people pronounce it boomslang, which is totally incorrect. A boomslang means tree snake, but it has some of the most deadly venom out there. When they bite you, you have about a couple of minutes before you go.
I just don't understand why anybody wants to live over there. It's like Australia. Anything it can crawls, swims, or is on the ground, it can kill you in Australia, and South Africa is about the same.
Well, how did your family end up there?
So we've been there since 1777 is when my first relative moved over there from France.
No shit.
Yeah. So my father's side, they're French, so they're from France, and then my mother's side is they're Dutch. So
1700s.
1777 is the first recorded case of my last name in the country.
And you're a Kruger, right?
Yes.
And that's Kruger National Park and Forest. I've known all about it. It's a very famous place. Y'all had 5,000 acres. What was that land
hectares.
Worth? Hectares?
Yeah, hectares. Hectares
what's
is about
difference?
4 acres.
So 200,000 or 20,000 acres then.
Yeah.
Okay. So you had 20,000 acres or 5,000 hectares. See, you fucking don't even do acres. The normal have to do something different.
Hectares and acres. I guess that's
so. So you had 20,000 acres. What would that land have been worth in, let's say, 1990 before all this shit happened? What could you have sold that for?
Probably about 8 to 10 million rand. So in rand, back then the currency was different. Back then the currency was a lot stronger. But if you had to convert it to how rands are right now, it's $18 to $19, 18 rand for $1. So not that much, actually.
Today, though, but back then the conversion was right.
But
back then with the conversion rate, it would have been quite substantial.
So $5 to $10 million.
Is that what the conversion rate comes to?
Well, shit, I don't know that. I'm just guessing that...
So in 1990, the conversion rate would have been closer to 4 rand for $1.
Okay.
So if you're putting 8 to 10 million rand to $1 and converting it to dollars.
So let's say $3 million. So basically, y'all lost $3 million in land and just wiped out. and some South Africans are running on it, and it's not Elon Musk.
Well, not even South Africans. The Zulu tribes from Middle Africa, right?
Or Africans.
Yeah.
What a weird deal, boy. What a fucked up place.
So when your family came over the first time, how did they acquire the land? Was it just a land grab basically back in the time, just empty plot of land and you can settle here?
So when Paul Kruger set up the Kruger National Park, he wanted a portion of it that would be not available to the public that could stay in his family. So that's kind of how we ended up with that. It was a presidential grant by him when he was in office for himself. So that was like his private property, his residence. And since then, it wasn't in a conservation easement. So we never developed the land or anything like that. We kept all the original buildings on it. So that's how we could afford to stay on the property. Because we were not wealthy by any means. My father had an environmental chicken house construction company. And we could afford to pay the land taxes like that because it was under a conservation easement.
Right. So I guess my question is like, when these things, are there debates over there? Like, were these politicians talking about, okay, we need to do this, we need to do this, and then... Were the white South Africans just basically outvoted in this, or was...
Yeah, so we're the one of the smallest minorities in the world right now is white South Africans. That's one of the smallest minorities you can find, which it's quite funny. The highest percentage of white people in the entire Africa is South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But the percentage of white people living in South Africa to the rest of the population is less than 3% now.
Right.
So, yes, we get outvoted left, right, and center. And one of the parties that actually recently almost won, they lost by a very small margin. Their main slogan, just like Trump's slogan was Make America Great Again, their main slogan was Kill the Boer, Kill the Farmer.
Oh, perfect.
That was their go-to slogan, and they almost won. So that's telling you something.
So this is not going to change anytime soon. I mean,
no.
South Africa's fucked for how many? I mean, Jesus. Will it ever go back to the way that it was?
So what's going to happen eventually is it's going to turn into Zimbabwe. So what happened in Zimbabwe is exactly what's happening in South Africa right now. They got rid of all the white people there. The country started starving. The currency went to shit. And they started now offering white farmers their old land back. The issue that they're having right now is getting people to actually take them back up on that offer. So the same thing is going to happen in South Africa. It's going to lose its value. It's going to lose its capability to feed its population. And what's going to happen is China is going to scoop it up because it was mandatory for our school system to teach Mandarin.
Mm.
Because China's fingers are so deeply embedded in South Africa right now that they're going to have control of it in the near future. They have heavily invested into the South African economy that South Africa owe the Chinese government a tremendous amount of debt.
So it's basically going to be China's control here in the next however many years.
Africa is the last.
Most likely.
Africa and the Amazon forest is the last places in the world with free labor or cheap labor that's coming.
Africa.
Yeah, I mean Mexico. Yeah. They've been doing for years. Central America, they've been doing for years. China, Thailand, Vietnam, all that stuff. Africa is the next step, and then after that, it's going to be the Amazon River the Amazon rainforest. That's it. Everything else has been they've already taken advantage of. So the Chinese are going to go in there.
A decent daily wage there is 50 cents.
Yeah,
in South Africa.
Yeah, and converted to dollars, 50 cents is a decent daily wage there that you can live off.
What do they call the Sub-Sahara Africa? That's Zimbabwe and all that, Botswana and all that stuff, right?
Yeah, so that's right above South Africa, above the Northern Cape.
That's where Obama was wanting to go in there and push clean water and electricity and shit because he's in bed with the Chinese, the deep state and all them. That's their last place to have work camps. And that's where it's coming at. But it's going to be interesting to see how the Chinese can go about doing this because the Chinese aren't really, really well-versed and letting other people do their thing. So I don't see them in these tribes getting along very long.
No. Like I said, if there's anything that that the people in South Africa hate more than white people, it's any other foreigner,
right?
No matter where they come from. So even another a fellowing, another black person from another country within Africa, the South African people hate them.
Really?
They are. It's not really so much a race thing with a lot of their hatred. So much as if you're different than me in any way, even if it's as small as just your location, I hate you.
That's just, it's crazy the amount of infighting that they have amongst each other. So, I mean, do they all rally around the fact that the white farmers have to go first and then we'll sort our own differences out later on?
Right now it's white people, number one hated race in South Africa right now. Then it's your Indians, then it's any of your Asians, and then it's your coloreds, which the coloreds are the white and black offspring.
Hmm.
And the amazing thing is there's no armies over there, really, other than their local deal. There's no kind of world stage for them. They don't have any kind of modern infrastructure at all. I mean, you're not very far when you go to a lot of them countries and going back into the 16 and 1700s other than automobiles.
So it's funny that you should say that, because since coming here to the States, I have found that the way that I was raised and the way that I came up was very similar to some of the people here in their 50s and 60s.
Mm.
So I came up in a very similar era than they did, even though I'm much younger than they are. My lifestyle was very similar to theirs because we are so far behind.
When you say that, though, what specifically do you mean? Are there any examples in your head to where you feel like you were raised more like the people were here in the 50s and 60s?
Yeah, so a television was definitely a luxury that not a lot of places had, unless you were living close to the city or something like that.
Right.
So we only received cell phone reception on one mountaintop on our property. So you were never on your phone. You were never watching television. You were always out there in the bush having fun and killing shit you shouldn't be killing. So we were very seldom inside. I will say, within the confines of our property, I had a beautiful childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely beautiful. Could not have complained at all. But anything off the property, it got very dangerous.
In Nigeria, which is the biggest population in Africa, I think 230 million people or something live in Nigeria, the average life expectancy is only 53 years of age. 77% of all babies are born dead,
mm-hmm.
and 10% of all kids never make it to the age of 5.
What kills them? Malaria?
I don't, just the shit they live in. I mean, it's a violent, terrible place, and they're just there's nothing there. But that's how bad in time you're going to go back. You can go to any European country, and their standards are probably higher than America.
What do you mean?
I'll bet if you go and look at Sweden, their life expectancy is longer than us.
Oh, mortality. Yeah, 100%.
And if you go to the Netherlands, if you go to France, if you go anywhere. But when you get to Africa, things go to shit real fast. From the top of Africa to the bottom of Africa. I mean, it's like going back in time.
Do you know what was the selling point back in the 1700s to come to South Africa? Was there like a big propaganda in France and
colonialism?
Yeah,
it was exactly that's what it was, colonialism. Move from the area you are currently, that your life is not being sustained to the highest value, to some place that you can make it so, create your own place. So the way that the Dutch, French, and Germans immigrated to South Africa was very similar to the way your pilgrims conquered the West. It was all done with ox and wagon.
Right.
That was the number one way that it was done. And we very quickly moved from the coast of South Africa more inland, because as soon as the Dutch, Germans, and French had started settling there, the British wanted a piece of the action, naturally.
Right. Word got out.
Word got out. The British invaded it. There was a lot of conflict. When the British came, the real conflict arrived. The conflict with the tribes, the conflict with the Dutch. There were a lot more wars whenever the British arrived. So what the Dutch did is we immigrated further inland. Because most of the people were farmers. They knew how to farm. And the best farming land was inland. So the British pretty much stayed on the coast. And if the whole selling point of Africa was the rich farmland that could sustain you, your family, and your community, generating massive amounts of profits to farmers that had never been able to feed their kids through the winter.
Right.
We have very fertile farmland in South Africa.
See, and that's crazy because, you know, whenever I see a picture of Africa or whatever, it's just this natural grass and it looks like nothing would ever fucking grow there if you...
I think you're looking at Egypt.
I guess so.
Yeah, if you look at how big America is.
Yeah.
So America was China's number one exporter for pecans. Do you know who the number one exporter to China is now?
South Africa?
South Africa.
For what?
But then look at the size difference.
Okay.
For the pecans. America is a very vast country, and they supply China with its pecans. Till I believe Trump put a tariff on it. And then they started using South Africa. South Africa is a much smaller country. Only the population is 65 million. But we produce enough pecans just from that country to supply China. That just goes to show how fertile it is.
Yeah.
It is phenomenally fertile.
What would y'all do for drinking water? Because we talked about it earlier about how a lot of these villages, they don't have clean drinking water. What was y'all's situation?
We had a lot of JoJo jugs. Which JoJo's are these massive plastic water reservoirs, and a lot of it would be rainwater. Mm. We'd find a way to gather up the rainwater because our wells dried up very quickly if you did not go extremely deep. So a lot of your farmers' plots were dug on wells. They were just extremely expensive to set up and very deep.
Right.
I believe here in Georgia we can hit water at 150 foot. And then your sustainable well is at 350 foot. So not that deep at all. And in South Africa, it was much deeper.
Right.
But most of the water for the cities and things like that come from the dams, which we have been going through a drought right now in South Africa. So there is a big water scarcity at the moment.
Have you been back since you left?
No. So since I'm a pending asylee here in America, it'd be very against what I'm trying to accomplish by getting away from the country if I was to go and visit it. Because the whole reason why I'm here is because we fled for fear of our life.
Right.
So if you return to a country that you fled in fear of your life, that'd be a little bit kind of against that way of thinking.
And you're still in that process, even after all these years?
Still in that process. I'm somewhere among 5 million backlog.
So you just go across the Mexican border and walk into Texas, and they'll give you $10,000,
and you get a gift card.
Yeah, I could have gotten you some new shoes, a phone, could have had all the paperwork done for me, maybe even shipped over to New York, a nice city like that or something. Yeah. I don't know.
They put you up in a nice hotel.
You're in a lot better place now.
Yeah, so for dog training especially, Texas is the best place to be because everyone views it as business over there in Texas. However, where I'm at, North Florida, South Georgia, it's less of a business thing, but the environment that you're working in is just phenomenal. It's just nature all around, plantation capital of the country. There's a plantation every 5 miles over here. And it's just it's beautiful scenery over here that I just can't get over it.
Where is North Florida, South Georgia, where you landed basically whenever you came over to America?
Yeah.
And just loved it and never left?
So Georgia, Florida's all right. I'd happily move further down into Florida.
You would?
Yeah.
How'd the dog training come about?
So we'd always been training our own hunting dogs in South Africa to just trail blood and kind of keep the property safe. So on our property in South Africa, we had Boerboels, which is the South African Mastiff. And then when we went out hunting, we'd use GSPs, German Shorthead Pointers. So I'd always been around them my entire life. And when I first came here to the States, I was in the process of completing my veterinarian degree. But I had to pay the international rate at college, so it was ridiculously expensive. So I'd go back down to Georgia, work construction for 6 months, go back up, do a semester, come back down, work construction. But eventually I just met a dog trainer that said, hey, you can work with me for the summer and we'll see how good you are. And that dog trainer happened to be Greg Oyer, which is one of the best dog trainers you've never heard of. And he's pretty much showed me everything he knew. He was 70 years at the time. He said, I'm going to kick the bucket real soon. Real soon. How about I just give all this to you if you work hard for it? So that's what I did. I said, screw the whole college idea. I can make it without a piece of paper saying I'm smart. And I never looked back again. We trained dogs on the plantation for about 2.5 years. I'm only doing hunting dogs. And then Greg's health kind of declined. He was unable to really teach me a lot more. So he reached out to James Hamm, who's Lone Star dog trainer. He's one of the top 10 dog trainers in the country right now. And luckily for me, I don't know what it was about me. It must have been the accent, but James decided to take me under his wing. And it's been life-changing since. He taught me more about the business aspect of the dog training, how to handle it better, how to be better with the clients, and to do more obedience dogs, because that's definitely where the money's at, is the obedience dogs.
You know, that's interesting that you wanted to go to school, but the international rates were so high. But we've got people from all kinds of foreign countries that come over here and we send them to school for free.
So they were eligible for scholarships. So I was not eligible for any minority scholarships because I was the incorrect minority.
Yeah, that's complete bullshit.
Yeah. So when I applied for the African minority scholarships, I was declined. When I applied for any type of minority, they declined me because they said, well, you're white. You're not a minority. And I'd laugh at them and I'd tell them, I'm the largest minority in the world.
Right.
You're not going to find more of me anytime soon.
Jeez. It's so crazy how hypocritical our whole country is. It's kind of like, this is Black History Month, and it's not African American History Month. I had a guy saying that the other day. It's African American History Month. It's Black History Month. But for African American history, Elon Musk is the greatest African American there is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's changed our whole world. He's South African, isn't he?
Yeah. He was born and raised in Gauteng, Johannesburg.
Where is that? How big of a place is that?
Big. Johannesburg's big.
So that's one of our smallest provinces, state, but it has the largest population in the whole of South Africa.
Hmm.
Are they going through the same things there too?
Yeah. The whole of South Africa is going through it, and Gauteng is much more urban, so they get they're getting a lot worse of it.
So how do you get updates? You know, you mentioned that your ranch is in shambles now. Do you still have contacts over there that are sending you updates on, well, the roof's gone or, you know, stuff like that?
Yeah, so my uncle, who's a PH, he often does work on some of the places close to it. So every now and again, if it's safe, he'll go by, swing by, and just take a look at it.
So how was he able to stay?
So he was able to stay. He has a piece of property that's also in the middle of nowhere, but it's not large enough to be desirable to the government. So they're going after the biggest plots of land first. And once they've successfully done that and gotten away with it, they're going to start going after the smaller pieces of land.
What's he going to do if he's met with this proposition?
He'll probably have to do the same thing because he's been here in America before guiding hunts and things like that. So we're in close contact with him. And he said if it ever comes push to shove, he'll probably have to end up here as well. Because luckily for him, he already has the visa for it. He already has the hunting visa that he comes over here and works on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's for him. His family's going to be another option.
So, I mean, when that happened to y'all, I mean, was he not worried that he needed to also go whenever, you know, your family left?
No, no. So we weren't even worried when our close family left years before us. We had family that came here to the States almost 10 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And when they first left, we thought, you quitters. Mm-hmm. You guys, we need to keep all of the young people here in South Africa so that one day we can take it back or at least improve upon it. That's the way we viewed it all the way up until the day that they seized our property. If they had never touched our land, we would still be there.
Wow.
Wouldn't be able to get good jobs or anything like that because of the BEE, Black Economical Empowerment, which requires a majority of jobs to be given out to people of color. But we'd still be there. That land was the only thing keeping us there.
Yeah. So if you would have stayed, I mean, would you have been able to make a life on that piece of property to where you would be comfortable enough and not starve to death, basically?
Yeah. Yeah. So we would never starve to death on that property with all of the wild game that it had. Mm-hmm. That would never be an issue. The only issue would be getting enough hunters on there to pay for our property tax.
Right. Right. And then what you just advertise over here? I mean, I guess just like Dallas Safari Club did and bring people over?
Yeah, so we would have my uncle, he's Declan de Jager. So he's like a guided PH that comes up on a lot of the websites here in the States and things like that. So whenever he would get someone that wanted to shoot a specific species and a specific size, we'd take a look, go out scouting on our property, see if we had it, and then he'd subcontract to us through him.
It's crazy.
I don't see it. Do you honestly think in your lifetime you'll ever be back in South Africa?
Once I get my citizenship, I'd love to go over there and just show my wife where I grew up so that she can understand me better. Because a lot of times she does not understand a lot of my views. And I'd love to just go over there and show her, this is how it was. This is why I'm like this. And this is why we have to raise our children like so.
Yeah.
So I'd love to go back there within my lifetime, but I don't see it really happening. I'd probably have to settle for going to a neighboring country and showing her what one of the neighboring countries look like instead of actual South Africa.
The people in the United States, we need to start learning something from the people that are coming over here from other places that are escaping, because we're wanting to turn our country into what they're trying to leave from.
Well, you said it's the number one country. It's the number one. It's the rape capital of the world, right?
Exactly. Yeah. If you go to a football game here in the States and you send your daughter to the bathroom, nothing's going through your mind. Nothing. She's going to the bathroom. It's a public environment. She's mm-hmm. safe. In South Africa, if you send your daughter to the bathroom during a rugby game, chances of her getting raped are very high.
And it's predominantly the blacks that are doing the raping over there?
Yeah.
Jeez. I don't know. You know,
that's also mainly because they are the majority of the population.
Right. Well, it's the culture over there, right?
It is. It is. So over there, women are really viewed just as a birthing mm-hmm. object. So the men view it as the more children you have, the wealthier you are seen. So your wife has to be quite a heavy set lady so that she can provide you with this many children.
I wouldn't want to take a date out over there. You know, I'd be worried about my wife and it. I know you've got a warm spot in your heart for where you grew up, but I think you're better off, dude.
Yeah, I wouldn't go back.
No, I am. You know, it's the most beautifully diverse country you'll ever see in your entire life. The food we have is phenomenal. The biodiversity and wildlife we have is phenomenal. But if you look past all of that, it's a shitty country.
Here?
No, there.
Oh, there? Yeah. I was gonna agree.
But you look at our places. There's places you don't go here. There's tons. You look at the demographics of our big cities. Our big cities are cesspools. There'll be areas that are wealthy areas, like we can use Los Angeles. You can go to Beverly Hills. There ain't shit going to happen to you in Beverly Hills.
Right.
But you go to Compton, and there's a good chance you're going to be a statistic. Mm-hmm. Now, not all Compton is bad, but that's just the way it is. You're talking about a whole country that's that way. And I don't even think there's a safe place. I'm assuming the wealthy black people live in a different world than the poor person does in Johannesburg, right?
Yeah, they do. They do. Some of the, because the majority of the wealthiest people in South Africa right now are turning to be black people. It used to only be the white people and the Indian people, but now the black community, they are quite wealthy. But they do, they move out of the area that they might have grew up in and form some very rich neighborhoods.
Do you remember the day that they came onto your land and told your family you got a week?
So I wasn't there. I was in boarding school at the time. I had a rugby scholarship to one of the schools that I needed to go to. So I just remember getting a phone call from my father saying, hey, you're not coming home for the holidays because there's no home to come back to.
Right. And then what did they do? What were their next steps?
So they stayed with a family that stayed in town for about 3 weeks till we could find a property that we could rent closer to my boarding school, which was in a different province. Just so that we can get everything sorted out, get all the paperwork sorted out to come to America legally. And that's what we did.
What is boarding school common over there?
Yeah, so the reason why boarding school is so common there right now for getting any decent education is because most of the boarding schools there are semi-private. So they receive some funding from the government, very little. Most of it is privately funded. So your boarding school education level is substantially higher than, I'd say, most of your, if not all of your American high school standards.
Really?
Because I was learning stuff there in grade 10 that I was going over here in college regarding college chemistry and things like that. I'd already learned it in grade 10. So I will say our educational system, at least the semi-private educational system, was phenomenally better than any education system I've seen here in America.
Yeah. No, you're not going to get me defending the public education here in the States. It's abysmal to say that's a compliment.
The priorities are screwed up.
Yeah. At what age do they send you off to boarding school?
So you can start boarding. Most of the boarding schools are only high schools. Okay. So at the age of 14 is when boarding school starts.
We had a guy out here and he asked Jeff when my younger brother was born, well, when are you going to send him off to boarding school?
So when are you going to send him off school? Like when he's 7 or 8? No, we're going to raise him. I know what I said is when he turns 18, he goes to college.
Right.
You know, shit. But he had grew up as a silver spooner and he'd sent off to school his whole life. His parents didn't raise him.
Yeah, I think 7 or 8, he got sent off to boarding school and came home for the holidays.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I was a mama's boy. So I hated the boarding school experience. It did the best for me. I'm very thankful for it. But yeah, I hated it. I could not imagine doing it from 7 to 8 years of age.
Well, my heart breaks for you just for the life you've had to endure to get to where you are. It's so unfair and it's just unbelievable. Just like I feel so sorry for the slaves that were black slaves in the South. What a terrible, and just for one human to treat a human the way they did is just terrible. And I just, it breaks my heart for you. And I can't imagine you wanting to bring your wife to go visit there. And I understand where there's a part of your life that you want to go back to, but I just couldn't imagine putting my wife, I'd be so scared. Mm-hmm. I'd be scared to death to go over there, go on a hunt. I mean, I'm fixing to go to Mexico in a couple of weeks. So am I much better off?
I don't know.
Yeah, but you know, all of the hardships that we experienced in South Africa it set me up for success here in America, because this is one of the only countries left out there that if you work hard, you can make all the money you need to make. So really, yes, my time in South Africa was horrible. It had many ups and downs, but it set me up with enough of a work ethic to come over here to the States and stand out a little bit. That's one of the only reasons why James Hamm took me in, because he heard from Greg Warrior that I had a work ethic. And that's because stuff was taken away from me. If no one had ever taken anything away from me, I'd be a little entitled white person in another country.
Yeah.
But that sense of entitlement was taken away.
Yeah, we don't. Work ethic is hard to come by in America. That's going to set you out for a long time. That's what I tell people all the time. If you've got young men... Or kids, girls too, 6, 7 years old, if you'll start teaching them some work ethic, you're going to be way, they're going to be way off, better off in life than if you gave them a trust fund and they got some money every month, because they can make a lot of money because of work ethic. Our kids don't have work ethic. I went by an orchard in Southern California the other day, and I drove by, and every person was a Mexican guy working there, every one of them. You ain't going to see a white kid or a black kid out there doing that kind of work. Mm-mm. It's almost impossible because they don't have the work ethic that those people do, because those people come from somewhere else and coming over here, and they realize how much better off they are in the United States of America. We as Americans take for granted our country. We do not know how lucky we are, but we are pissing it away pretty damn fast.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Were there any other countries that your family looked at and said, well, maybe we can go there? Did they ever think about going back to France?
So we have family in France, Britain, Russia, New Zealand, Australia, Canada, and South America. And we don't get along with any of them. So we decided, you know what, we'll be the black sheep and come to America.
Just go to America and make it work there.
Yep. I mean, your movies is this country's best propaganda. If if you want to close off your borders, just start putting out movies that make America look amazing.
Yeah, we're gonna have to do something. Well, listen, this has been very eye-opening. You've had a hell of a life, so we're glad that you're over here in America now, that you're safe and prosperous, and keep working hard. And thank you for coming on here and telling your story.
Well, I appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to kind of get it out there. It's very hard information to come by these days. It's very heavily regulated out of South Africa, so the more people can get aware of it, the better.
Yeah. We had a guy on, he was a counter poacher, his name's Seth Yawn, and he was telling us about the Moody murders. Basically what they'll do is they take infants, babies, and I guess they use the parts for black magic.
Yeah, Moody,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
so that was another one of those things that I'd never heard about.
Yeah, you'll never see a live albino person in South Africa.
That's what he said.
Because they're killed so quickly for the Moody.
Yep. Yep, that's what he was saying.
What a laugh.
Like, it's got, there's different grades, but basically, like you said, albino is kind of the most rare, and I guess has the most powers, so.
Exactly.
Yeah, they'll kill you on the spot.
Boy, there's a lot of people going to boil in hell. Mm.
Crazy stuff, man. All right, bud. Well, listen, thank you so much for spending the hour with us. Sounds like y'all are getting rain there. Yeah,
we're getting quite a bit of rain, so I couldn't have trained dogs anyway.
There you go.
God bless you and your wife. Congratulations on the new baby. You have we wish you the best. If you ever get to Texas, we'd love to have you come out, and we'd love to host you here.
All right. No, I'd really appreciate that. Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Devlin, how's his last name? Yeah, good luck.
Hagen.
Man, what a tough life. God almighty. I just imagine busting your ass for years, building up a ranch and doing whatever.
300 years.
Yes. And then some people just come in and take it away because you're the wrong color.
And they're not even from there.
No, it's just.
The people that took it away were not native at all.
I was trying to look up the demographics of the white population in South Africa and I couldn't find it, but I know it's.
I thought he said 3%.
It's very rare. It's very, very low.
I thought he said 3%.
And you're hearing about the white people they're killing. Well, they're killing each other left and right too. It's terrible. I don't know anybody that goes over there to hunt. It just, man, you're taking your life into your own hands.
Everybody does. Because
there's nowhere to call.
No, you're not calling for help.
You know, and it just, it's bad. And someone's going to come in and say, hey, I just got back from there and everything was great. I'm sure it is.
Sure, yeah.
I'm not disagreeing with you on that, but man, you're just taking a chance that you go down the wrong street or the wrong road and they don't give a shit what you are. I read a book recently and a guy was in South Africa and he got paid by a family to go get a brother that had been kidnapped. And it was based on a true story. And it talks about going in these neighborhoods. And luckily he got in with a preacher, a black preacher there that helped him. And that black preacher had street cred.
Oh.
They were scared to death of him because he had been a big time drug lord or gang lord or whatever they called him at the time. And he turned his God to God and he helped this guy. And if it wouldn't have been for him running into this guy, he would have never made it out of alive of that neighborhood.
Now, obviously, I don't know much about South African history. I thought Mandela was a good guy.
I don't think he was a bad guy. I think our press made him into be a good guy more than he was, probably.
I mean, obviously, I've heard the name, and I'm sure I wrote a paper on it back in high school. I just don't remember it.
Apartheid was big in the late 80s and early 90s. Mm-hmm. I don't know much about it. We never studied South African, but a lot of it wanted to give back. I think that the media went off across was, it was like they thought of the southern United States.
Segregation.
They just built this up with slave labor and blah, blah, blah. No, they took people that built a... Colonialism went in there first. The King of England went over there, and they took over a bunch of stuff. And they kept everything pretty much in check for years. After World War II, things went to shit on a lot of places like that. But I think those people took back their countries, but they didn't realize what made their countries prosper was other people that were doing things. And right. They don't have the same prosperity, and now it's just terrible.
Well, and Mandela could have just been the first movement for a little bit of equality, and then over the course of the last 30 years, yes. Basically, it's just gone from what Mandela wanted to we're way over here now.
I think in the 50s and 60s, it was pretty much a white, wealthy people that controlled the country, but everybody had a pretty good life.
Right.
And they've just kind of taken and stripped all of that away, and now it's just shit. You know, I don't know, but that's the route the media wants to make all Southerners, white Southerners in the United States are supposed to be like.
Yeah.
You know, they're all racist, and that's not true. There was racism, and there's still racism. There's racism on both sides.
Sure.
I mean, you're seeing reverse racism in fucking South Africa. If you're white, they're just killing you. Yeah. That's about as racist as you can get. But they always want to make an incident that happened in the 50s and 60s, and they want to make that to all of America, and that's not true.
Yeah.
And we're going down that road pretty fucking fast. I mean, they really are. I mean, you got different rules set for different people. It's not fair.
No. Scary times.
It is. And that's the guy that's got to say. Devlin's got a very scary story there. It's going to be a lot to have to scare that kid.
Yeah.
Just imagine the shit he went through.
Right.
He had to grow up really fast.
Yeah. Bad deal.
Interesting podcast for sure.
Maybe we'll wake up before it's too late over here. I doubt it, but there's never been a time in history where we learn from other people's fuck ups.
No, not at all.
You always have to like, oh shit.
Not at all.
You always got to go through your own thing. So, all right. Well, I'm glad he's over here, safe and sound, very interesting podcast. So, yeah, that's basically it. We'll talk to all y'all later.
Go by, check out Hemp Hill Farms. Get your dog on some CBD. Take for his anxiety. 4th of July is not as far down the road as you think it is. Get your dog on that shit. So 4th of July, I don't have to read on Facebook about everybody, please don't shoot fireworks around Fifi.
Load them up. Load them up now. Get them used to it. NWTF is this week. We'll see everybody in Nashville.
Come by the boss booth. Bye.
Watch for deer. Check out all of our sponsors. Go check out Boss Shot Shells, MLR Graphics. Baseball season's coming up. You're going to need jerseys. Pacific Calls, BHP25, Dive Bomb Industries, Dirty Duck Coffee, Shin Gear, Looking Glass Podcast, Lucky Duck, Ducks Unlimited, Double T British Kennels, Mossberg, Sanford Outfitters, Alpha Outdoor Specialties, and Hemp Hill Farm. Use the promo code BHP.